And it's the same with the moon. The moon calendar, every night of the moon has its name.
We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Calico Beamer Trapp, a man from England, but now a person of Hawaii teaching the Hawaiian language. And if you want to know more about his work and learn some of the Hawaiian language, you can go to his website. It's olelo.online.com, and he spells Olelo, O-L-E-L-O, olelo.online.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Calico Beamer Trapp, and he is a language teacher of Hawaiian language here on the Big Island of Hawaii, and that's where we are right now. And I would love to go back a little bit to Auntie Nona and who she was and how you actually became Hane to her, and what does that mean?
Right, yeah, that's a good question. You know, hanai is a word meaning to feed somebody. That's the literal meaning of the word hanai, is to feed somebody. Now, traditionally, in the olden days, you know, there were many families, maybe one too many children come along, or, you know, you can't take care of the children. So another family, or oftentimes relatives, grandparents and so on, would hanai one of the children, meaning take that child and care for it as their own. And, you know, the child would grow up, and those hanai parents were her parents or his parents. It's kind of like adoption, you know, in that sense. But it's not a formal thing on a piece of paper. It's just traditionally it would be that one family takes care of a child who needed to be taken care of. And so that idea of hanai then was brought down through time, and there are still families that do hanai. But in the modern time, we've added another aspect to hanai. And I think that my situation represents this newer type. And that is that sometimes you want to take a person who's a little bit older already, not a baby or not a one-year-old or a two-year-old, but take somebody who's already a teenager, you know, perhaps, and take care of that child. Take care of that person for whatever reason. Sometimes it becomes because they're on the wrong side of the tracks, you know, in trouble, or sometimes it's because they're looking for something to do and you might, you know, be afraid that they get into trouble. So you want to educate them in what you know, which is Hawaiian farming or tapa making or, you know, any number of Hawaiian things. So you hanai the person. And in this case with Auntie Nona, she was so sweet because She wanted to have somebody who she could give her stories and her chants and her history, bits of information about songs and so on. She wanted to give that to somebody. And her two sons, Kapono and Keola, are, you know, well-known musicians here in Hawaii. Keola and Kapono Beamer are very well-known musicians through the 70s and 80s. And still to this day, actually, they still play music. And they were very much focused on slack key, guitar, and music. And I think Auntie Nona perhaps said, you know, I want to find somebody to whom I can give this knowledge of my old stories and my old songs and my teaching methodology. And then here I come walking along, you know. And so she basically did that. She did that via a hanai relationship. So in 1996... we went to Waipio Valley, ostensibly to give some birthday gifts to friends of hers. These birthday gifts were small chants that Auntie Nona and I had written as name songs, if you will, giving Hawaiian names to certain friends of hers. And so I thought that that's what this trip was all about. We arrived down there, we gave the names, surely enough. But when we arrived down there, all sorts of family members were there, Beamer family members, and we, Auntie Nona turned around and I was sitting in a chair next to her on the little tiny DS that we had made, a little tiny stage. And she turned and said, "Well, everybody, thank you for being here for Kaliko's Hanai ceremony." And I said, "What? Oh my goodness, wow." So anyway, the tea leaves were laid out and then we had a little ceremony where Auntie Nona basically invited me to join the family and asked the family if it was okay that I join. And I said, you know, "Yes, if you'll have me, of course I'd love to, and I shall uphold the name. I shall uphold the name as I uphold my name Trap. I shall uphold the name Beamer as well and follow your instructions, Ma." I call her Ma. And so from then on, I've been part of, you know, Auntie Nona's side of the Beamer family, and I'm so grateful to be there. She passed away in 2010. And so, sorry, 2008, I apologize. She passed away in 2008, April the 10th. And so, you know, I feel it's my responsibility, or what you say in Hawaiian, my kuleana, to continue on with her teachings that she gave me. And I am so grateful that she did. So that's how I appreciate that. It gave me a real big push, and it's allowed me to have more influence, if you will. It allows me to have more power inside, knowing that I have the love of Auntie Nona backing me up, if you will, from wherever she may be at the time, at this time. And so I feel that it's keeping me rolling, and I want to keep it going.
She had a particular way of teaching too, didn't she? That you carry on. Can you just give us a little description?
You know, I probably can be brought down, although nobody's asked me that specifically before. I think perhaps the main thing is encouragement. You know, even though you see students who are not doing so well, or maybe, you know, it's like when they draw a picture, you might tell a little kid, "Draw a picture of an insect," you know, and then some horrendous picture pops up. You know, you still try to find the best thing in there. "Oh, now that is beautiful. Look at the shape of that opu, that tummy on that insect. That's very nice. Now, darling, what about the antenna? What about the eyes? What about the top of the thorax?" You know, those kind of things. Like, you look for the good thing and lift up the student and then say, "Now here's where we can make some improvement. How about this?" You know, leading them on instead of pushing them along, you know, leading them along with some interesting way of talking and being sweet and nice. But at the same time, there's a little stern hand back there ready just in case they want to, you know, hang about in the bushes. You can grab them by the hand and still pull them along if you need to, but then get right back there and lead them. I think that that's one of the most important aspects of Auntie Nona's teaching that I do continue on. And I've used that teaching in the Hawaiian immersion schools where I taught 7th to 12th grade from 1996 to 2002. And then I returned here to the university and I've been teaching classes here at UH Hilo, Hawaiian language classes, as well as linguistics classes in Hawaiian language, about Hawaiian language or Polynesian languages. And even with adult students like this, I still use the same techniques. And I try to really lift up the students and help them to see the good parts of what they've done. And then that's where I add on, "Now here's how we can make an improvement. Here's how we can make an improvement." And try to lead them forward to that, make them want to do it.
Let's talk a bit about hula, because many of us are familiar with hula, but maybe not the origins of it or even what I think. I heard that Auntie Nona brought hula back to its original form, that was kind of restricted for a while. Am I getting that correct?
Oh, yes, you are. Yes, you are. So, you know, if we look back into the ancient past in Polynesia, all the Polynesian people have dance, you know, dance. And so hula was mostly done, as far as we know, on heiau, or religious platforms, for religious reasons. So to illustrate a story or a chant that is done for one of the many gods or for some outcome, or certainly sometimes for the entertainment of the chiefs. And so hula was done by the chiefs for mostly religious purposes, but then also some entertainment as well. Now, what happened when the Western missionaries arrived is that they thought that this was very lewd and lascivious behavior, and that it should not be allowed because these heathens are doing dancing in all sorts of ways and it must be all about sex, you know, which of course was not the case at all. But they basically made it very difficult for people to dance in the 1800s. The missionary influence made people feel embarrassed if they were to even show those kind of things. Playing the nose flute, for example, was considered, the devil's instrument and so on, because it had to do with love sorcery, they thought, and so on. So the 1800s really was a time when hula knowledge went underground, if you will. The people who knew about hula and even chanting went sort of quote-unquote underground, kept it to themselves, kept it in their own families. And that was continued through past the time of the overthrow in 1893, past the time of the provisional government, and then to the territory of Hawaii, and all the way up until really brought out into the public in a new way in the 1920s, when the territory of Hawaii wanted to promote itself to the world, most especially the United States, as a destination for tourism. And at that time, we find new types of music coming out of Hawaii, you know, with the steel guitar and a bass and all those kind of music, as well as flashy hula brought forward from the old days of chanting into melodic songs. And so that then went through that era of grass skirt hula and, you know, tin pan alley hula and all that kind of thing, all the way up until the 1950s. And during this time, it was considered improper at Kamehameha schools, where Auntie Nona was a student, to do hula at all. And so if you wanted to do hula, you could do sitting hula, but you were not supposed to stand up and dance. And Auntie Nona broke that mold by actually standing up and dancing. She did get expelled for doing it, but anyway, she talked her way back into getting into school again. And in the end, she encouraged that, you know, hula is an expression of being Hawaiian. It's not lewd and lascivious behavior. It's not something that should be stamped out. It's a beautiful expression that comes from native roots and should be continued on. And so that's why hula then was brought back out into the open, if you will, and various kumu hula or teachers of hula have their own lineages now, and they talk about, you know, this was my kumu and this was my kumu and this is my kumu. They can count back generations of kumu all the way back into those days when hula was underground. And now here we are with things like this, the Merry Monarch today, which is a huge festival of, you know, hula, both in traditional and in modern styles. And so that was one of the things that Auntie Nona worked on as well.
You spoke briefly about chanting too, indigenous chanting. Can mm-hmm. you say something about that?
Yeah, so chanting is done by, Hawaiians, of course, from traditional times. And there are many different ways of using your voice that we can actually talk about, different styles of chant. But none of them are melodic in the way that we would think of Western music, or where you have harmonies and so on. There may be one or two or maybe three notes only in chant. And the techniques used in chant to make it, quote unquote, interesting are different than what we see in Western music. So, for example, we don't have rhyming lines, which Western music has. We'll have something like, a word at the end of one line, which is the same as the word for the next line. So it allows the two lines to sort of blend together,
if
you will.
It's very intricate. Yeah. Well, let's talk more about that in just
okay.
one moment. I just want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Kaliko Beamer Trapp, and he is the teacher of Hawaiian language here on the island of Hawaii, on the Big Island. And he has a website called olelo.online.com. Olelo, O-L-E-L-O, online.com. Or you can go to the website of New Dimensions, newdimensions.org, to get there. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. I'm here with Kaliko Beamer Trapp, and he is a teacher of Hawaiian language here on the Big Island of Hawaii. And we were talking about chant, and you said it's not quite rhyming sort of chant, but what is the importance of chant in the Hawaiian culture?
Well, the chant was one of the methods of retaining Hawaiian history. So, you know, from generation to generation, the chants were retained without change as much as possible. I mean, it was considered wrong to make any changes to chants unless something accidental got in there. Really, they didn't change. And these would be like the genealogies of the chiefs or traditional stories told through chants or what we call mele, which are, you know, poetic compositions where, for example, if there were a story about somebody going to some place or, you know, somebody climbing a mountain or whatever, those stories are actually contained in chants rather than a long sort of open-ended narrative. The narrative pieces are short and the chant pieces in between are what really fill in the interesting aspects of the stories. And those chants didn't change. So over time, we have this huge body of knowledge which has been retained in Hawaii. And when the arrival of the Westerners came here, you know, in the 1820s, they started writing down Hawaiian for the first time and making newspapers. The first Hawaiian newspaper was in 1834. And by the time it got to 1861, we had our first independent newspaper. And after that time, we had around 168 newspapers between 1861 and the mid-1900s. When the last Hawaiian newspaper finished. And those newspapers were full of all of these chants, which were written down by Hawaiians, realizing that the culture and the language was under attack from Westernization. And so we are so fortunate that today we have this huge repository of Hawaiian newspapers and later on Hawaiian recordings of voices of the kupuna, of the elders speaking. And these are now becoming available online, which is absolutely incredible.
And you're very immersed in that project.
Yes, because that's a project that I've been working on for several years now. We have an online digital library called Ulukau. That's U-L-U-K-A-U. And you can Google that and find that very easily. But that's a Hawaiian online library. We have audio files there. We have all the Hawaiian newspapers are there. We have maps and place names and all sorts of fascinating stuff. Even the Bible and everything is on there. But this is thanks to
the Bible in Hawaiian.
Oh, yes. That was the first document that they wanted to put into Hawaiian in the written form, of course.
Of course.
In the late 1820s. After they invented a way of writing it down, you know, they said, okay, the goal was to write the Bible in Hawaiian. So we have all of this stuff. But, you know, when we talk about the Hawaiian literature, if you will, that is all of these chants and all of the old songs, the mele, the poetic compositions, brought forward all the way to today without change because of the fact that they were written down in the 1800s with such passion. And so that's where we're very grateful for all of those kupuna who kept the tradition of not changing the chants as much as possible. And in fact, if we read the old Hawaiian newspapers, we find people writing in each time the publication came out, you know, if it was a twice weekly or a once weekly, saying, hey, you got that wrong. That line is not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be this. You know, they were right back and forth. You're full of baloney, you know, in a sense. You know, that's not right. This is the way it's supposed to be. And so it's wonderful. When you're able to speak Hawaiian and you can then delve into these sources from traditional times, that's when we find out really what the thinking was about kahuna or priests and the religious system and games and sex and all the old history of Hawaii. You really find that by reading the traditional native source, which is written in Hawaiian language in all these newspapers and many books too that came out during that time, you know, not relying on people who have translated them and added their own flavor of meaning. You're getting it from a secondary source there. If you can go back to the old newspapers, if you learn how to speak Hawaiian, well, wow, you have access to this huge field of beautiful chants, beautiful songs, beautiful stories and so much cultural information embodied in these newspapers and in books in the late 1800s.
That's amazing that that's preserved. And this has to do with that whole revitalization movement that you're part of. So tell us a little bit
about
this.
Well, by the time we got to the overthrow, that would be 1893, the state of Hawaiian language was poor. Hawaiian language was being squashed slowly by Westernization and English language. For example, by the time it got to around 1893 of the overthrow, there were really only 28 schools that were teaching through Hawaiian language.
And when you say overthrow...
This is the overthrow of the Kingdom of Hawaii. The country of Hawaii was overthrown by a group of businessmen from America who said, you know, they wanted to take over Hawaii for the protection of the people, you know, mostly the Westerners who were living here. And so they overthrew the Hawaiian government by force. And unfortunately for the queen who was in power at the time, Liliʻuokalani, she was not able to get the U.S. government to agree to give the country back. Instead, the United States said, okay, we'll turn it into a territory, and it became a territory of the U.S. And that brings us to this point about change over time and the revitalization, because when the overthrow happened and then it became a territory of the United States, there was a huge surge in love and patriotism for Hawaiian things in the very early 1900s. And so we have, at that period, the first sort of songs being written, the patriotic songs for Hawaii, the songs about the islands and the rain names or the lei names or the mountain names or the colors that each island would have, all written in these westernized songs where you have melodic structure, four verses, five verses, two, three, or four lines per verse. All of that in modern, you know, style music that you would hear today with ukulele and guitar and all that, that's when the ukulele came around. That's when guitar was added to Hawaiian music. That's when the steel guitar was invented, right around that time, at the very first part of the 1900s. And then as time moved forward, there was also a huge influx of foreigners to Hawaii. We had Chinese, Korean, Filipinos, all coming in, Portuguese, you know, all sorts of folks coming into Hawaii as workers for the sugarcane plantations. And they were also, that admixture of people meant that Hawaiian language was kind of squashed down even more, and Pidgin English grew as the language of the people. Those last folks who grew up speaking Hawaiian at home were born in the early 1900s, 1915, 1920 maybe. After that point, after 1920 or so, people were speaking English at home because the territory would send teachers around to the homes and say, you guys are not supposed to speak Hawaiian at home. You're supposed to speak English to your kids. That's the language of the future. That's the language of prosperity. This is the territory of Hawaii. We're going into the future. Stop looking back. You know, and so they convinced the parents that the kids have to speak English. They grew up then speaking Pidgin English, which is what we still have around today, based in Hawaiian, but with all of this admixture of other languages, including English. And then if we fast forward now to the 1970s, you're talking about these folks who were born in the early 1900s as Hawaiian native speakers, learning Hawaiian at home, were in their old age already and heading on out to the vast beyond. And so the young folks at that time in the 1970s said, you know, they were, you know, in their early 20s at that time, they would say, oh my gosh, we're losing these elders. We're losing these kupuna. We need to somehow preserve this. We need to preserve our knowledge. We need to record them, record their voices. We need to write down their stories. We need to recover our Hawaiianness because they're disappearing. These old folks are disappearing. And so thank goodness they did. And we had resurgence in Hawaiian navigation. We have resurgence in Hawaiian planting practices and dissemination of that knowledge of slack key music and Hawaiian songs, lots of new Hawaiian songs being written at that time. And then the language itself coming, being taught again in schools openly. And the invention then in the 1980s of Hawaiian immersion school systems, which then goes all the way through to today, where we have now a PhD in Hawaiian right here at this university where I'm sitting. We have master's degrees and PhDs in Hawaiian language. all the way through with this revitalization that happened, sparked by the loss of these kupuna, or the elders, in the 1970s. And so it's important to me that we keep on this work, that we keep on revitalizing Hawaiian, working hard on preserving it as accurately as possible, in the same way that those chants had to be preserved by the kupuna, not to have them change. I think also the language has to be preserved properly. We must not let it be pigeonized, and move it forward so that the earth has all of its beautiful contingent of flowers, including the Hawaiian flower, which is so valuable, I think, to world culture.
Beautiful, beautiful. I just want to end on some idea. There is an idea of aloha. Mm-hmm. It has meaning. Mm-hmm. It's not just a phrase, but it's a meaningful mm-hmm. phrase. Mm-hmm. And we have like 30 seconds okay. for you to say, what is the true meaning of aloha?
Oh my goodness, that can't fit into 30 seconds. But aloha is love. Aloha is compassion. Aloha is hello, and aloha is goodbye. Aloha is thanks, and aloha is appreciation. It's so many different things depending how you say it, how you're connecting with the person that you are saying it to, and what the context may be. It's a beautiful word to remember. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You so much, Kaliko, for being with us today on New Dimensions.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been speaking to Kaliko Beamer-Trapp, and he is the creator of the online ololeonline.com. And this is teaching. You can go on there and get all sorts of wonderful information about the Hawaiian language. Learn it online. He's just spreading it out in all sorts of ways. So do check it out, ololeonline.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions, program number 3681.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You, too, can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours, sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.